Hi, welcome back, Quentin Singleton, your adjunct professor here. We're doing the course on Introduction to Sports Betting. This is an executive education course with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Today, along with Unit 9 on Sports and Live Event Integrity, we have a great team from the Las Vegas-based firm of US Integrity. We have with ourselves Matt, Jason, and Colin. I'm not going to read everyone's deep bios, which you're going to find on the website, but I thought, Matt, maybe we kick off with, you as founder and CEO, give a brief intro on how you got into here, and then maybe we just kind of go around the horn really quick. If you guys want to give 30 seconds each, that'd be great.
Sure. Thanks, Quentin. Great to be here. Thanks, everyone. Matt Holt, president, CEO, co-founder of US Integrity. We're a game integrity, fraud prevention, sports betting compliance firm based here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And back in the day, I was an executive at a company called Canner Gaming, and they were the largest licensed sportsbook operator in the state of Nevada and thus the U.S. And, one of the things we did there is do some pretty, I'd say, rudimentary integrity services and data sharing, information sharing with many of the professional and collegiate sports leagues. So, getting to know those folks, we tracked the industry very closely and knew in late 2017 that PASPO is likely to be repealed in Q2 of 2018. And when we looked at the first four states that already had regs in place that were ready to go, Delaware, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, we saw that they had mandates that licensed operators had to contract with a licensed independent integrity monitor and noticed that there really wasn't one. So we created in U.S. Integrity in 2018 to fill a regulatory void. And since then, we basically work with almost every licensed sports book in North America, almost every major professional and collegiate sports league, and regulators in 40 states, as well as Ontario and Puerto Rico.
Well, that's great background. Jason, you want to kick in next?
Sure. My name is Jason Vantoff. I'm a vice president of investigations for U.S. Integrity. My background primarily revolves around military and government agencies. After that, I happened to have a foray for a little while into a professional sports league, and that's where I happened to come into contact with Matt and U.S. Integrity and moved over here just this past summer.
Great. All yours, Colin.
Thanks, Jason. Colin Pratt. Head of our finance and data analytics departments at U.S. Integrity. Have a background in banking, equity research, a little consulting. And then my dad was actually a football coach and my mom was a calculus teacher. So came and joined the U.S. Integrity team where, sports and analytics, there's no better cross-section than the sports betting ecosystem. So I've been with the company for over 2 years now.
That's awesome. Well, look, Matt, I kind of want to go back in time. If we can, I want to go back in time to a decade ago. You had talked about doing this a while back. What is taking place now in integrity with data and analytics and technology platforms has really changed in great ways beyond what it was like a long time ago. Do you want to just, you and I could probably trade stories for an hour or so on this, but do you want to just talk about what integrity was like about a decade ago? And also like the scope of it in terms of trying to help people understand how much integrity oversight was there across the sports and across it for sports betting.
Sure. So, if we just go back 6 years ago to prior to May 14, 2018, the repeal of PASPA, essentially there were two ways for people to bet in North America. Illegally, which the vast majority of folks did via websites and apps and per head and bookies and or in Las Vegas, Nevada, or in Nevada, basically. So at the end of the day, we certainly didn't have anywhere near the level of transparency, access to data, access to information, collaboration, cooperation that we do now. So really all we would hope is that if people are trying to participate in sports betting in a nefarious way, whether it be match fixing, misuse of inside information, game manipulation, that maybe some of that activity would funnel into the legal market in Nevada where we could identify it and hopefully catch it. And Nevada did have some history of identifying some match-fixing issues. If you go back to 1994 with the Arizona State issue with Headache Smith, but that was literally operators identifying a big group of students coming to Nevada in Arizona State gear, betting as much money as they could get down against Arizona State five times. Nowadays, using technology, data, and analytics, we think that we probably would have caught them the first time. But everything's technology, data-driven now. And at the end of the day, it kind of starting to mirror financial services, where every trade is reported. The SEC is analyzing these trades in real time for abnormalities and potentially nefarious activity. That's what we're doing with data and technology at U.S. Integrity on the sports betting side, is using data, using real-time wagering data to identify abnormalities and instances that could require further investigation. But beyond that, what we have seen is a systematic change in philosophy in the entire sports ecosystem, whereas just 6 years ago, we didn't have the buy-in and collaboration from the leagues, and the sports books didn't always collaborate with the regulators as much. Now we have a full-driven commitment on the league side to help ensure that they are educating, putting in policies and processes for deterrent, and then identifying and disciplining and adjudicating instances of nefarious activity. And the sports books are also fully cooperative. And then, of course, we have the regulatory agencies, where we don't just have one anymore, Nevada overseeing sportsbook. You know, we have 37 states where regulators and gaming commissions in those states are collaborating or talking or cooperating and across state lines to ensure that we really do have the right integrity protocols and processes in place. I think it's still early days. I think we have a lot more we could implement that would certainly lead to the success of integrity issues in the U.S., but we're so much further along than we just were 6 years ago.
That's a good point. Just to repeat what you said, to put that in perspective, we effectively went from, let's really call it one state in the U.S. with full-blown sports betting, to 37 states. We went from a market that had, what was it, $300 million in revenue, $400 million in revenue in Nevada, to now a multi-tens of billions of dollar market in four or five years. So integrity and its oversight for the industry went from one single state, a smaller number in terms of dollar revenue, to like this massive growth over 4 years, right? And so what, I think what's important about that, what does that mean for integrity in sports, right? So just like, Jason, like you were on the league side, Matt being on the private side, trying to say, look, let us look at these things and let us provide the nexus for leagues and regulators and operators and suppliers. How are you looking at this? What does integrity mean to the leagues when you were there or now that you're with USI? What change did you see on that?
So, yeah, I think it's very much to what you and Matt have been talking about, you know, previous and especially prior to PASPA. It wasn't our issue type of a thing. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that leagues were just letting people run around and do anything that they want, but it was kind of a, hey, this is either an illegal activity that's happening within the United, or not happening legally within the U.S., and therefore it's a criminal matter. It's something for the FBI. It's something for law enforcement. Or it was, hey, we've got one area, and for the most part, sports leagues really kind of did stay away from Nevada outside of some tournaments. I mean, you didn't have actual teams based in the Nevada area too much. But as it's become a definite fan engagement mechanism, as it's become a definite revenue generating mechanism, the leagues have kind of looked at it a little differently and evolved their actual opinion on what sports betting is and whether or not it's a positive thing or a negative thing, or at least whether or not it's something that they should be partnering with. So I would say that previous, it really kind of focused around, we have a set gambling policy for our employees, or we have a set gambling policy for our athletes, and as long as they're not violating that, that's really all we care about. If it's going to be, you know, a match fixing issue or something like that, it's law enforcement. I'd say the leagues in general are becoming much more proactive in trying to develop capabilities within themselves, also looking at their actual policies and making sure that they're still relevant for the day and age that they're in. Now, obviously, that's a very hard thing to do, to set a policy for a company that may be 8,000 people plus another 2,000, 4,000, whatever athletes that are not really considered employees per se. But I think that they are trying to evolve that and trying to get better to meet where the industry is going and participate. I think it's pretty apparent that they recognize, as do regulators, as do operators, that nobody's going to be able to do this on their own. And so a company like US Integrity and information sharing and the ability to hook individuals that are at least own a piece of this environment together is a really important thing that a lot of industries are embracing, or a lot of leagues are embracing.
And Quentin, I think one of the things that we need to remember is that, you know, when we talk about integrity, people always want to immediately go to match fixing. But basically, right. game right. integrity around sports and sports betting is any nefarious, illicit, or illegal activity. It's match fixing, it's game manipulation, it's misuse of insider information, it's illegal betting, it's prohibited betting, you know, where athletes or coaches betting on their own events. It's this wide array of issues. It's not just match fixing.
Well, and then there's the other side, the non-criminal, illegal, illicit, right? Which is a group has a set of policies to protect yep. the institution and sports cases, the players, the league, the coaches, right? Like, hey, you live in a different world. Like, you're heavily focused here. You might not know if you release a piece of information or if you place a bet that could have repercussions beyond what perhaps you would ever even think about. So there's also, like, to Jason's point, the policy side. You know, we talked about that a lot back in the day, Matt, which is like, there's the policy side, which is like, help people on their policies and help them support that integrity there, university institutions, professional institutions, but also, of course, the criminal side, working with regulators at the federal and state level too.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I think there's also just a recognition of how much information is valuable. Now, when you look at it from a league or any company society or side, you know, there's definitely the proprietary information, right? The technology of what this is, but what information is actually valuable? Things like, you know, the rise of wagering on drafts, or the rise of wagering on awards and things like that. And just a little piece of information that at one time, maybe 5 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, a league or a governing body would have never thought that that was something they needed to hold training with their athletes or their staff to say, hey, don't be putting this out on Twitter. Don't put this out on TikTok or tell it to your friends, because it actually does have value as far as something that could be used for inside information.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, even to go full circle, right, there's the bet, like, with USI sitting in the middle of the more or less four or five groups there, even on the operator side, so sportsbook operator, fantasy sports operator, generally anyone operating a game in the sports space or type of sports, mm-hmm. and then the underlying technology providers as well, data, platforms, etc. There's always a need for integrity there as well, right? So operators have policies like their employees cannot bet on sports, obviously, with their company. Some go beyond that and say you can't bet on sports at all. But also, I think, Matt, through some of the USI services, eventually you grow to that point too, where you're also providing it back to the industry too.
100%. And look, there again, to your point, there's integrity in data. At the end of the day, if the data is wrong, and we've seen some errors before, we actually just had a tennis official, we won't get into the specifics, but he was manipulating data. So say you and I are playing tennis, and in the first set, Quentin's beating me 30-0 in the first point. Well, he would put in that I'm beating you 30-0, because those automated data companies that are building the odds on the data he inputs, so then he intentionally inputs it wrong. The odds change to me being the favorite, even though you're winning. The bettors know he's going to do that. They hammer the books, and then he corrects it and flips it back. And as you know, in most regulated jurisdictions, unlike the offshores where they would go, oh, obvious bad odds, we're not going to pay. In these regulated jurisdictions, it says if you take the bet, you have to pay that bet. So there's all kinds of integrity with data feeds and integrity with ingestion of odds and creation of markets, where little things make a huge difference.
But yeah, and even on the data analytics piece, like Colin, like walk through like what your day to day is when you're going through and looking at sports and data. To Matt's point, how does that all tie together, and how do you view the world from that deep analytics point of view?
Yeah, I mean, at the core of it, we, you know, we say we are a technology and data analytics company. At the core of it, we are a pattern recognition company. We're ingesting wager level data from the sports books, direct odds feeds from the sports books, which we all know are just probabilities of various outcomes happening. And then we get a plethora of what we'll call sports data from providers throughout the industry. So injuries, what time is the contest happening? Who are the coaches? Who are the officials? And we layer all that data on top of each other and then identify anomalies. To give you some examples, if we see a spike in betting activity right before the star point guard for a college is announced injured, you know, that's something that is flagged in our algorithms and that we're looking into. If we see 10 times the betting activity in terms of tickets coming in on a low-level UFC or tennis match, you know, that's something that's flagged in our algorithms. And then our integrity and investigations team can go in, collect all the data, review everything and say, okay, was this anomaly that was flagged in our system? You know, we then put the arc onto it of, you know, is this something that we can explain away, or is there truly something nefarious that could be going on here?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point too. I think something to call out, Matt, is around, remember the debates back in the day on whether betting level data was necessary versus market level data? Do you want to walk through like what the difference is there and why betting level data, which I guess I'll tee this up, is highly more valuable to making real world decisions than just looking at, if you will, the top level movements in a market, which are indicative as well, but perhaps not as highly indicative as understanding the better level data?
The better level data is so critical for us to actually be able to identify, and then for law enforcement or regulatory agencies to actually be able to pursue, yeah, and then prosecute if there are issues. And at the end of the day, odds move for a lot of different reasons. And some of them are just due to people want to move them or feel like moving them or made errors moving them. But at the end of the day, let's compare it to the financial service world again. You would never go to like Charles Schwab and say, you know what, just send us the trades if you find them or not. Like they have to send in every trade. We have to be able to analyze and identify a re-wager if we're going to identify abnormalities. And I think it's really important, and there's two things to it. The better level data, knowing that, hey, better A normally bets $50 a game on football. That's his pattern. That's his normalcy. But if he wants to bet $50,000 on a low-level boxing match or MMA, well, that's really abnormal, and it's really abnormal for him. And the other one is if you're dependent on individual operators to tell you when they think something abnormal, or you're just using high-level data or odds moves, at the end of the day, a $10,000 bet on a mid-tier college basketball game in one sports book isn't suspicious. It's probably not going to be identified as abnormal. But if I told you that that same $10,000 bet was one of 12 $10,000 bets placed at 12 different properties using their online app simultaneously within the same 15-second window, now you'd go, wow, why did a guy bet, you know, $120,000 but spread it across 12 books and use bots to make sure that they all went out at the exact same time to ensure the odds didn't move? Every operator would agree, wow, that needs to be looked into. But if you ask each operator individually, what about that $10,000 bet you just took? They might go, hey, you know, I don't think it's too bad. That's right. So you need to have access to that bet level data and that transparency in order to really identify what really requires further investigation.
And this is anonymous data, right? You're not actually, USI is not actually looking at Colin Pratt, account number 12567 at Sportsbook Y. It's anonymized data, but you're protecting the player's information with the sportsbook operator. Is that right?
Correct. So all of the integrity protocols we use anonymized data. And in fact, the prohibited bettor solution that we launched, ProAbet, we don't even see the data. So the leagues themselves and the prohibited bettor solution, ProAbet, they in you know on an app that we put on their server, they input their players, coaches, trainers, equipment managers, administrators, and it's encrypted on their app. So it never leaves their app unencrypted. We do the same thing on the sportsbook side so we can identify and prevent people from placing wagers on their own events as prohibited bettors. And we never even see the data. Every single piece of data that flows through the U.S. integrity system is either encrypted or it's completely anonymized. And I think that keeps the systems completely unbiased, keeps us from storing PII, which we really like in today's environment. So if anyone ever hacked us, they would never get access to anyone's data, and gives the leagues the security they need on the data side. One of the reasons I think we didn't get the same level of support from the leagues back in the day that we did now is they're concerned about the security of their data and that data getting into the wrong hands. Using current and more innovative new technology, we've been able to solve a lot of those security issues using encryption, using new technology. And now that everyone feels like their data is safe, we can use anonymized data to identify abnormalities in real time and be much more effective than we ever were. Because the problem is, okay, if you find abnormalities, investigate them after the fact, you can bust people later. But if we identify them in real time, we can get the betting shut down. Stop all these bets from rolling in before it becomes an avalanche while it's still a snowball, and then prevent some of this activity, which causes some of the mayhem later.
Yeah, I could remember, you know, before this kind of advanced technology existed in services, you'd be on a call, they'd be like, we've got a bettor who bet 5,000, then 5,000, then 5,000, then 5,000, and we're approaching 50,000. What do you think? Let's stop taking the bets.
Let's stop taking the bets.
Ask him what he's up to.
Yes.
You know?
And one of the things that's a trigger for us is if we see those continuous bets, like you just mentioned right there, at different odds. You know, if the line on a game is -7 and someone bets 10,000 and the line goes to 7.5, but they could still bet -7 at other books. Okay, they bet another 10, it goes to -8. Well, why are you betting -8 if it's -7 across the street? And we know pro bettors won't do that. They're going to take the -7. They're too price sensitive to ever lay a bad number. So one of the big triggers we have is people betting at off-market numbers that don't make sense. People betting a team -10 when you can get -7.5 in the marketplace. That means they're not price sensitive, and at that point, they think that, you know, maybe they have information others don't.
Yeah, what's your interest in betting if it's not to win money?
Correct. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Jason, in your experience with, like, the background and government and the leagues, how do you view, like, what we're talking about? I mean, Matt and I come at this from the industry perspective a little bit, and how back in the day, in fact, when we worked together on this, was trying to push really this bettor level data was necessary. And now, of course, some years later, the industry has adopted it. Everyone's coming into full circle. The regulators have adopted this approach. The platforms are stepping in. You know, from your experience, you're pretty good, like, how important is this as well?
So I'd say, just, you know, to Matt's point and to Colin's point, it's something that's absolutely necessary. I will be careful as I say this, because I have never ever not had enough data, or not had, I've never ever had too many data points to actually look at. You know, as Matt said, there's a lot of reasons that things happen. There's a lot of reasons why lines move, why people bet things in different ways. Sometimes it is just that, you know, fluke feeling or whatever else. But the context of what's happening in social media, the bettor level data, the trends of how teams have faced, and everything that's out there is just, it's absolutely necessary. You know, I spent most of my time probably in the counterterrorism world, and we would have never just said, okay, this type of terrorism is this type of terrorism. We'd get into the backgrounds of who the individuals are that specifically are starting this group, and the dogma that they're actually following, if it's a, you know, a political or a religious institution. And so, yeah, I think here, similarly, the more granularity that you can have at a level of information, the bettor off that you are, and the more context that you actually have to identify things. There's plenty that I've seen since I've been here and previous stops that on its face value, it's just, man, that looks suspicious, or there's not something right about this, or this just doesn't make any sense. You know, you brought up the one guy betting $5,000 10 times. Yeah, it makes no sense at all. He could also just be the craziest OCD person that there is and need to do, you know, hit the app 10 times as opposed to putting 50K on it or something. Who knows? So all four, the more data that we can get and the granularity of that data. To Matt's point, I don't think that we need, you know, that it's Colin Pratt specifically, but, you know, a better account saying that it is, you know, this same individual doing something does help identify some of these trends and some of these anomalies that we're looking for.
Can you, it's really interesting. Can you walk through, maybe as a group we all walk through, but can we call it, Jason, can you walk through how an investigation works? Because inbounds for an investigation can come from outside of USI. Mm-hmm. They can also come from within the USI system or whoever wants to kick it off. Can we talk about how investigations maybe start? And then to the extent you're willing to, I'm not asking for anything internal, but like, you know, can you walk through what a high level, what a process looks like for an investigation and what some of those outcomes are, just kind of give everyone that front to back view?
Yeah, so Jason and Colin could certainly walk you through the steps, but basically we average somewhere around 18 to 20 alerts a month that have to get sent out to operators and licensed operators and regulators. And of those, about 45 to 50% turn into suspensions, bans, or arrests related to nefarious or illicit sports betting activity. So about half. So let's say 9 or 10 every month, 100 to 120 a year, people getting banned, suspended, arrested due to nefarious sports betting activity, just to put some numbers around it. Wow. And those alerts are catalyzed in one of three ways. The first way being our system identified some type of abnormality using our data. That abnormality was then flagged to an analyst who would look into it. And Jason and Colin can walk you through the steps of how we take that, investigate it, and turn it into a robust report that lands on the desk of some regulator or law enforcement. The second way is that operators identify instances of suspicious or abnormal activity. Again, the guy that normally bets $100 a night on basketball suddenly wants to bet $100,000 on the first set of a tennis match. We're going to flag it right away, start looking into what he saw, or, hey, I have video evidence of this, or whenever they see, they send it to us. Again, we anonymize it, redistribute it to other operators, get their responses, put it into a robust report, hand it off to the appropriate law enforcement or investigative agency. And then outside agencies that may provide us information, and that is a really vague and very wide group, but it could include anonymous tips, other agencies around the world, like the International Olympic Committee or FIFA or UEFA, that are sort of governing bodies over leagues, social media somewhere that somebody, you know, posted on social media that came through our social media monitoring system. All the alerts are essentially catalyzed in one of those three ways. Someone at our team gets it, and then they land in the world of Jason and Colin, who could sort of walk you through, I guess, our investigative process to the finish line from there.
Sure. And maybe, Colin, do you want to take another kind of discussion on some of the actual data sources that we're using and some of the, I guess, kind of thresholds and things that would light up a system?
That'd be great.
Yeah, so we actually build dashboards that are like formulas that are looking for these things in real time, and they're linked to our databases that are bringing in direct odds feeds from sportsbooks, the actual bet level data anonymized again from the sportsbook operators, and then again this real time what we'll call sports data, just any material public news that's going to impact a sporting contest or impact the betting market. All of that's flowing into one spot, and then we are building dashboards that are looking for these abnormalities and specific instances of or specific ways in which just we see the data come through.
Back to your point on patterns, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is where we use AI, Quinton, the most. So when people talk about applications of AI in regulated sports betting, in our side of the business, before we can identify what's abnormal, we have to identify what's normal.
Totally.
And with the constantly evolving, just the way people bet, you know, when you and I used to market operators, it was basically three markets, point spreads, over unders, and money lines. But now we've seen this massive buildup of live betting, prop betting, micro betting, which again, a couple of years ago, what's micro betting? No one had heard of it. Now it's going to make up 3 to 5% of betting in America. It's, you know, the next pitch, the next play, the next shot. And so at the end of the day, we have to have a system that's smart enough to keep learning what all these bets mean. Suddenly, what's the normalcy for these bets? What is the average we think is allowed on these bets? Because the liquidity in these markets is different and how much you could even wager on them. So a $20,000 bet in NFL may not seem that suspicious. There's lots of big bets. It's a very liquid market. But a $1,000 bet on women's college volleyball D2 might be just as abnormal because the average bet is like $11. And so at the end of the day, we have to make sure that we're using AI in our world. And that's where we really use it. At this point is to make sure that we're continuing to develop what is that baseline of what's normal so we can actually then identify, well, what's abnormal.
And not to cut off the discussion, but also on that point, can I go back to the history? The scale and size of the data pools just in the U.S. alone, I'm seeing this across a lot of startups, innovation in the space, and I know you guys are as well. It's moving beyond the capability of human intelligence to actually identify, track, and contemplate or understand really, right, what's going on. And to your point, if you start doing these micro markets everywhere and you're trying to figure out, has someone figure out how to manipulate a game so that they could take advantage of pitch level bets, right, which are much harder to detect than in the macro game bets.
Yeah.
Right. And if you go, I guess the point I was going to make, if you go back in time, we used to do this with a spreadsheet.
Yes,
spreadsheet?
Excel spreadsheets. Yes.
It was literally very a spreadsheet.
And that wasn't like 100 years ago. It was 10 years ago. We were filling out Excel spreadsheets. And now look where we are using AI in real time.
Yeah, and highlighting red, yellow, green, right, based on variances on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And using that to identify, did an umpire act within a reasonable basis? And now it's like way beyond that. So back to the point, like on that part, Colin, you guys are ingesting what's only going to get bigger, right?
Yeah.
Large volumes of data.
Just to highlight some of those numbers, I mean, in 2018, there was $6 billion wagered across the nation. Last year, 2022, $102 billion wagered. So we went from 6 to 102. 2023 is going to be some, legal regulated markets here in the United States.
Point. Part of the market, not all the market.
Yeah.
Yeah, this year will be somewhere around 125, but.
So what we were talking about was basically all of the input, all the data that you're adjusting, Colin. We talked about that the last year was about $100 billion in total bets placed or handles we talk about, approaching 120.
Legally.
Right? Legally.
Yeah, approaching 120, and that doesn't account for California, Florida, and Texas. And you know, once those three states legalize, I know. Florida just relaunched. The regulated market in the United States is north of $300 billion. We cannot deploy enough resources towards our technology capabilities, our data warehouses, our ability to manipulate and ingest just the sheer mass of wagering tickets that are being placed now, but also just looking to the future. You know, we still have three more turns to go until we reach a fully mature market. And our ability to identify anomalies hinges on our ability to be able to ingest and analyze that data.
You know, one of the interesting things, Quentin, is people always look at the market and they say, well, let's just look at 2023. We had double-digit NFL suspensions for betting, dozens of student athletes at Iowa and Iowa State University for prohibited betting issues, a major D1 college baseball tournament team where their coach was terminated for being involved in an illicit betting scandal, all kinds of other issues. We're just over a year removed from a major UFC match-fixing issue. We have all these different organizational potential issues. And some people say, well, that's the problem with sports betting. And we always say, no, that's actually us showing you that the system is working. That there are no more Arizona states where these guys fix five games before someone finally takes a look, that we are identifying these instances in real time as they happen, and we're not seeing repeat offenders because we're catching them all right out of the gate. And thank goodness we have that same commitment and contribution from the leagues and the operators.
Yeah, I was just going to do like a guesstimation, but based on the volume of bets in the U.S. alone, you're going to start approaching, if not already surpassing, overseeing a billion bets a year, right?
Yes, 100%.
I'm just doing some rough estimates on the average bet size, right? But you're approaching this massive capacity on a per bet basis. It's pretty big.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And then the micro bets and prop markets and the growth of live in play, where all of those averages tend to be lower than the pre-market bets, where people that bet on point spreads or money line before the game starts tend to bet more than the average bet of these micro bets.
Totally.
Where people can make 100, 200 micro bets in a game, and the average might be $6, $7. And they're really small, but they're nonstop and continuous. Every pitch, every batter, every play in football, next play, run pass, next pitch, ball, strike. And all of those markets, A, they're only available through new technology and the data capabilities. But we, on the integrity side and the oversight side, we need to keep up with them. And it's all about technology, the ability to get data, make sure that that data is clean, that that data is normalized, and that data is usable to us in real time. And I'll tell you, it is so much faster moving this space than even the most optimistic people would have said in like 2017. I remember the most optimistic people being like, well, in 5 years, we might have 10 states opened. And I mean, to your point, we are 37 states, over 40 jurisdictions. You know, think of Ontario and Puerto Rico and all the tribal jurisdictions. It has moved so fast and grown so much bigger than anybody thought that we're seeing big tech come in and bringing unbelievable innovations on the technological side to it.
Well, and that's leading to things like, I think the most recent one you guys launched was Prohibet, right?
Yeah.
Like, why is that so important, first of all, to the sports leagues and teams, right? I mean, you gave a couple examples just now, stuff in the news, but like, from the league side as well, I mean, why is that one now possible as a product or service?
Well, one of the things I think is important, and I'll hand it over to Jason too, but I mean, we've seen so many suspensions. And it's unbelievable the amount of people. But one of the things I always get from people is, well, what if people are betting on their own team? Isn't that okay? And I say, absolutely not. And it's not just the amount of information they have, the fact that they might be using locker room level information that none of us have to make wagers that's not publicly available. But let me use an example of using an athlete who's retired, so we don't, cast any aspersions here. But let's say we let Tom Brady bet on his own matches on over-under touchdown passes, and Tommy bets the over on his own game. I'm going to throw more than 2.5 touchdown passes today. And people go, oh, that's a positive thing. He's betting on his team to do something positive. Yep. But the problem is when it's first and goal from the 1 yard line and the coach wants to run the football, well, now the incentives of the team and Tommy have started to diverge. He's saying, well, I want to throw the football. I want to get that passing touchdown so I can get that over on the prop. And the team saying, no, Tommy, we want to run the football. We believe that's our best chance to score, least likely to turn the football over. And suddenly you get divergent incentivizations, and that can happen in any sport. Any type of wagers on your own events can be manipulated, whether through the misuse of non-public information or diverging incentives.
Yeah. And then how does something like ProBet, Jason, start protecting, I think, almost like at a whole other level? Maybe talk about what ProBet is for the audience, but this is potentially one of the first of its kind. This may be the first time ever launched, right? As a service, right? I've never seen it before.
Yeah, I'll let Matt answer that part as far as whether or not it's the first ever of its kind, because he's obviously got the history. But yes, to my knowledge, this is the first of its kind. So what it is allowing leagues to do is obviously sports betting has been adopted by our country, but as we've all talked about, by the number of states and jurisdictions that are allowed. There's commercials that we've all seen that are being, you know, run at the Super Bowl, run at the NHL draft, run at the NBA All-Star game. And quite honestly, there's at times confusion within the general population on what fantasy sports is, daily fantasy sports betting is, where you're allowed to do this, where you're not allowed to do that, companies that you're allowed to invest in. And what Prohibit does is actually kind of help make sure that people are staying within the guardrails set by their policy. So we've mentioned a couple of sports leagues, and for the most part, no sports league allows their athletes to bet on the league that they're participating in. No state that I'm aware of allows athletes to do that either. But this just basically kind of helps set up those blocks. So if somebody decides that the rules don't apply to them, or at times, you know, just kind of, hey, I knew that I probably wasn't supposed to be doing that, but I'm allowed to do that. I was able to walk into an operator and sign up for account, and they took some wagers. This just kind of helps set those guards in place and make sure that if somebody does do something that they're not supposed to be doing, it is actually a conscious action and something that they have to find a workaround to actually get past their policy. So it just, go ahead.
I think it's the most important product, Quentin, since the most important product we've seen launched since the repeal of PASPA. And the problem is, if you look at almost every single state's regulations across the country, to simplify this a little bit, they have some type of prohibited better language. And it almost always states in some shape or form, if you play, coach, officiate, or are a person of influence over that sport, you are prohibited from betting on that sport. Simple. If you're a player, coach, referee, equipment manager, have locker room access, you can't bet on the sport. No problem. We all get why, how that makes sense and why you shouldn't be allowed to do it.
Yep.
But the problem has been, on a practical application side, how are operators supposed to know that Jason's a football player and Colin's a tennis player and you're a golfer? How do I know when you walk in and attempt to place those wagers or sign up for an account that you're actually someone prohibited, that you're a coach or a referee? There's no way for operators to know. And thus, we saw this massive amount in the last 18 months, especially, of prohibited people who are not supposed to be able to or prohibited from wagering on their own events getting caught. Prohibit is the first practical solution, where again, we take the list from the leagues, we encrypt them, we do the same thing on the sportsbook side, but it's not just a, hey, I'll bust you after notification program. Prohibit literally says, when you go to place that wager, which you are prohibited from, it stops you right there at the wager placement. Rather than busting those people after, you would get a notification, sorry, we cannot place this wager. You are prohibited from doing so. And then the league and the sports book are notified in real time that there is a wager attempted to be placed. So no one's violating any law because the wager didn't go through. But we stop the bets from happening, notify the leagues and the operators so that everybody continue to take whatever adjudicative or educational action they need to take to make sure that the appropriate people are aware of why that they are prohibited. It is so important. And because it's in almost every single state's laws, but there has never been a practical solution. Every jurisdiction said this is important enough to include in our laws, but no one ever quite figured out before how we're actually going to enforce it.
Yeah. During that first expansion, it was a fairly readily accepted concept, right? And on the operator side, everyone was just like, okay, but how are you going to do it?
Yeah. How do you do it?
And as the market scaled, you were like, it's like, and we've seen this recently in some of the states, right? Actual insiders, if you will, using that term, from the league side or the collegiate side, placing bets, it's next to impossible, right? And look, no sports book is going to have a Facebook of every single, you know, staff member in a single college, let alone 300.
That's right.
So this really does provide that tool for the industry. And one of the things I kind of want to ask you guys, like, where does this go next, right? Because, like, the application of being able to stop something before it shouldn't happen in real time is pretty amazing. But that's not the only place this could exist. I mean, in the gaming world, it's also operators, for whatever reason, may block a player outside of them being related to a team or university. You know, we see this on the RG side. Where do you guys see this? Where do you guys see USI going from here? I mean, you've already made huge moves in the space, redefined the industry. You know, the team is phenomenal. You must have 1,000 ideas. Don't give up the ones you don't want to give up. But, like, maybe just generally, like, where do you see it going next?
I think, to your point, we're starting to see that collision of responsible gaming and integrity already, where at the end of the day, the same technology and applications we're using to prohibit bettors can also be used for multifaceted self-exclusions or involuntary banned list or involuntary excluded list. You know, one of the problems everyone's trying to solve now on the RG side is if, you know, Matt Holt wants to go self-exclude himself from one app, well, while I'm excluded from that, I still have the ability to go to every other app within that jurisdiction. And it's not just about self-exclusion, but being able to set monthly limits or regularly limits, cool off periods, don't let me exceed this certain amount of money. But again, if I set my monthly limit at 500 and I go deposit 500 at Sportsbook X and I lose it, I can just go to Sportsbook Y 1 minute later and deposit enough. So it's not actually the ability for me to enforce my own limits, for me to enforce involuntary exclusions for lots of different reasons, bans, you know, chargebacks, forgery, fraud, whatever. We're finding that our technology has multifaceted uses across the ecosystem. And I think that we're going to see a lot more collaborative efforts instead of all these nuanced compliance and reg tech firms that all provide individualized services. But how do we provide a singular service, a singular login, so on a singular platform that sort of encompasses all of these amazing responsible gaming, game integrity, and AML and compliance services?
Yeah, I think about KYC and AML, right? Because there's a couple systems in the industry, not just sports, but kind of the broader gaming industry that are used. And you'd like to say that at the point of contact with the consumer that it's in real time or foolproof, but there's always room for improvement there, right? I mean, remember the old school days of KYCing someone in person at the counter?
Yeah, literally swiping their license and getting back information. But those checks were for very basic things like terrorist watch list, wanted.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we didn't know if they had, you know, millions of dollars of chargebacks at other operators or had just committed a fraud in an operator across the street. The idea that we could do better KYC, better AML prevention, and do it in real time is invaluable to the entire ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. For the audience, that was me air swiping a driver's license at the counter.
Yeah. And that's literally what we used to do, right? We used to use that system and air swipe it. And what's funny is the checks were so rudimentary back then, it came back one of two things, red or green.
Oh. Yeah. And usually, like a lot of failures, the red was like a false, right?
Red.
So you're just like, no, the system's just not working.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, maybe we take like the last couple of minutes, 5-10 minutes, whatever you guys want to throw out there. But I mean, one topic I want to throw is like, you know, what's the next big evolution? I keep asking everyone, what's the next big change you see in the industry? What do you think are the big items that are going to be coming down the pipe towards USI over the next 2 or 3 years?
Go ahead, Colin. We'll let you guys take it and I'll hit cleanup.
To me, it's just legalization in the last three states, big populous states. I'm from Texas originally. I can't wait to see the Lone Star State legalize online gaming or sports gaming or retail casinos. You can't turn on ESPN or Yahoo Sports or anything these days without seeing someone giving you their best bet or someone trying to tell you what the best prop is on the Thursday night football game. And we're not even a third of the way there. It'll just be interesting to see how America, who has always stood for sports being best on best, continues to digest $200 billion more a year in sports wagers and just how that impacts how we view sports and if companies like us can continue to protect the integrity of competition. Because, you know, I don't want to be too much of a sports romantic, but, you know, that's why we tune in on Monday night to watch, you know, watch Monday Night Football, is because it's the best athletes in the world competing against each other. And if sports wagering is going to take away from that value, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. And that's really why we go to work every day, is to protect that integrity of competition.
That's going to be a tough answer to follow, but no, it's absolutely terrific. So, you know, I think one of the things that's kind of evolved over the last 5 years as well is, you know, what we'd call gambling Twitter, right? People did not start betting 5 years ago with the repeal of PASPA. They didn't start betting, you know, 60 years ago when Nevada stood up. It's been going on since forever. But what has kind of given rise, along with all of these apps, along with the legalization of sports betting, and to a point, I would probably say, you know, with us having to sit a year at home due to a global pandemic, is this rise in people talking about sports betting and using social media for good and for bad, for many things. And so we've seen already some cases of athletes being harassed by individuals that had, you know, a $40 wager on the over under. I see U.S. Integrity and actually a lot of regulators really starting to look at this as an issue, and to continue to make sure to Colin's message of making sure that we keep sport free from outside influences, really starting to look into that space and trying to go after individuals that feel that it would be okay to question the integrity or threaten a 19-year-old individual who missed a free throw in an arena of 15,000 people.
Totally.
So I think that's one of those things that, especially now, we're looking at, you know, we're looking at a set of bettors, right? Most states, you have to be 21 to bet. Well, 5 years ago, those were 17-year-old individuals who, you know, are way more proficient in social media than any of us. And it's just going to keep growing and growing. So I'd say you're going to continue to see more movement towards mobile and a gambling Twitter or gambling social media type of interaction, and the need for more monitoring of that. Not so much for a necessary integrity concern, but a threat, harassment, intimidation type of concern.
Yeah. Matt, I don't want to disrupt your thought process on this, but can I tee up kind of this question based on Jason?
Tee it up. Yes, please, fire away.
When I think about that expansion, I mean, that's a highly hot topic now, is outside influences, not necessarily related to the gambling aspect of it directly, but affiliated with it, that should not be tolerated, first of all, generally speaking, right? But it's an avenue to, I mean, if I'm making things up, right, I'm going to say, okay, great, you're going to identify these people, and they're going to get on their own blacklist. There's a long history of blacklisting people for a certain reason from the industry. The second thing it makes me think about, Matt, is, you know, when Jason, you mentioned Twitter, you know, there's a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot of, I don't want to qualify it. There is activity taking place, targeting, for example, underage individuals through social media and other channels, and driving them into the gambling space, whether it's sports betting or not. And like, those are also like another way to kind of think about this broader ecosystem, because you start going through the layers of the onion, there is a lot of different layers that need a different type of protection or come from a different angle. And so I point that out because I think, one, that's, well, I just think it's interesting, but two, you know, in terms of where you think USI will go, Matt, like, the point I want to tee up is that the growth of the U.S. in this very short period of time, prior to this, to recall for the group here, most of our audience, or every part of our audience here, will be from around the world. Going back in time, sports betting as an industry, very opaque globally. It took place, but wasn't fully reported. We don't really know technically the size of it, with some certain exceptions. The U.S. all of a sudden came online and became this massive exception to the rule, and grew at scale in such a massive period of time, it demanded and required things like U.S. integrity. And the more it grows, it requires U.S. integrity to grow and provide more services like Twitter protection or some of these things. So I'm trying to tee that up with a very long introduction to what we're seeing now in the U.S., what USI has done. USI is already reaching out and putting these services into other countries. What do you think about this in terms of where everything is going with USI, but also with the angle of international growth, right? Colombia, Brazil's coming online. How do you guys think about that here and then globally?
So international expansion is our number one priority in 2024. And it's amazing. You're right. I think the U.S. has sort of set the tone here in terms of if sports betting is going to move at a pace this fast in terms of advancement and evolution, technologically, better-wise, yeah, engagement-wise, almost half of all the Americans of age in the U.S. make some type of wager. The numbers are astounding in terms of participation and engagement. So one of the things that we're really focused on now is that confluence of services and how at the end of the day, they better serve the greater ecosystem. And at the end of the day, when each service is sort of restricted to its own little space, we all do our job, but together, those services and the data we see allow us to collect information and data in real time that allows us to stop prohibited bettors, know when you've exceeded your limit, know when you're placing a suspicious bet, freeze the entire market when a game is identified as abnormal. Literally, by having that one confluence of services on a singular platform, we're able to then do things we never would have been able to do alone, regardless of how good the technology is, which is identifying all these different instances in real time. Hey, someone signed up for an account and we're not letting him in real time because we know even though he's trying to sign up in Colorado, he just committed fraud in New Jersey a couple weeks ago. All of that we could do it in real time. But at the end of the day, we need to continue to make sure that we're protecting and evolving to protect everybody involved and everybody not involved. We always talk about any of the sin industries and when there's abuse and addiction and things that it's never just that individual involved. There's always a circle of people that are always involved in that. We recently launched a project called Athlete Alert. And Athlete Alert literally was our response to what Jason was talking to. Harassment, abuse, and criminal threats related to sports betting activity by problem gamblers. We actually had a couple of states to put some legislation in effect. And it's not just, and we always talk about it from our business side. And we always want our business to have a societal benefit, but we're still a business. So we always think of the confluence of services and how it best is an asset to the industry and as a business. But at the end of the day, the one thing we haven't talked about that we need to ensure happens, which sometimes can be problematic and slow, is the legislative and regulatory environments need to move as fast or try to move as fast as the technology and the evolution has here. Because at the end of the day, we're only as good as the laws and the regulations that we have in place to protect us. And nobody thought sports betting would move this fast. And we know legislative efforts normally, period, regardless of industry, are normally slow. Technology's moving so fast. Innovation's moving so fast. Engagement is way beyond anybody's wildest dreams. There's all these confluence of things happening. We also need to make sure the legislative and regulatory efforts are keeping up with all the evolution of those other sectors.
Yeah, look, to put a pin in it, sports is a global business, right?
Yes.
Baseball is a globally watched business. NBA, one of the top globally watched sports in the world. NFL, continuing to expand its presence all over the world with its international games. And in my day-to-day, I think a lot about how, is not that more countries are coming online, but as we see the industry continue to grow, we see more and more countries regulate and legislate to legalize something that exists that may not be illegal. It's just not kind of overseen through like a regulatory framework. More and more this is required. And I immediately think of the Americas and all the activity taking place throughout the Caribbean, Mexico, Brazil, Chile, Peru. I mean, it's just growing and growing and growing. And then, of course, we know what's taking place in Europe and in the UK. So it's as we see this demand grow and sports continue to and will always be global, it's certainly going to be a global service that USI is going to be providing, right?
I could tell you one of our biggest motivators was, and people can Google it. It's very public. You can find it. But there was the president of a major European soccer league a few years back who publicly came out before the start of a season and said, conservatively, this year in our league, 8 to 10 matches will be fixed. And I thought to myself, is there any way as Americans that if Roger Goodell went to the podium and said, hey, 8 to 10 of our NFL games will be fixed this year conservatively, or Adam Silver or any of the other commissioners, would we as North Americans say, oh, yeah, that's not bad, only 8 to 10 of them are going to... We would not accept one if we knew it was fixed. Never mind 8 to 10. And I think inevitably using the right technology, the right resources, and a commitment from all stakeholders involved, we can make sure every jurisdiction across the globe that has major sports and sports betting, that we continue to strive for best versus best and don't ever get into a situation where any of us are comfortable saying, hey, conservatively, 8 to 10 matches will be fixed this year, and that not be shocking to the fans who hear it.
For sure. I mean, that's a great end note to the conversation. Like Matt, Jason, Colin, appreciate you guys being on here. I know that the students of this executive ed course are going to be enthralled, if not intrigued, by what USI is doing. And consistently, I am watching the expansion of the team and the products and services. And it's just one of the highlights of the industry, certainly for the last 4 or 5 years.
Great. Thanks, Clinton. Thanks so much for including us and this great educational session.